Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lecture 2. This is the lecture I gave last week, but we recorded under rather bad conditions at a Starbucks restaurant, so I'm going to give it again. Now, in this chapter, which is chapter 1, is especially important in understanding what's going on in the book, because the book, after all, is called Human Action. So it won't be a surprise that action is the most basic concept in praxeology. Remember, praxeology is what we were talking about, which is the science of human action. So this is the real concept. We've got to understand what Mises means by action, because this is the key concept in the whole book. What you mean by action is purposeful behavior. Say, if my right arm just went out suddenly, I had no idea it was going to do that, I wouldn't have done it on purpose. But if I say, well, I'm just going to lift my hand up, I just want to lift my hand to make a point, I have a purpose. That's why I'm lifting my hand, just to give an example of doing something. So that counts as action. Behavior is something that's something physical that's going on in me, and it's done for a purpose. Now, it's very important to know that action is in the world. It consists of things that I'm doing. So reason isn't talking about mere thought, but behavior that has physical effect. So supposing I was thinking about giving a lecture on chapter 1 of human action, just my thinking about it doesn't count as an action in the way Mises is using human action. I have to actually give the lecture to count as acting, that we have my purpose would be to give a lecture and I'd actually be doing it. So action is in the world. So Mises was very interested in psychoanalysis, the study of the mind that Sigmund Freud developed in Vienna in the late 19th, 20th century. But what goes on in the Freud unconscious or subconscious isn't itself action. We should be able to see why not, from what I said already, because remember, action is something that has effect in the world, in the external world. It isn't something that's just going on mentally in our minds. So something that's going on just in the unconscious, right, unconscious, it isn't, that isn't sufficient for action. But Mises is very interested in psychoanalysis. It isn't part of that job. So if you don't like psychoanalysis, or whether you like it or not, you just don't think it's a valid way of studying the human mind, that's perfectly compatible with accepting sexuality. But Mises is a person who did think there was a lot to it. And he thought that it was valuable because it showed that some behavior that wasn't previously classed as action really is action. Suppose, for example, somebody just kept moving his arms in a particular way all day, just had all these funny nervous tics. People might say, well, that isn't action because it isn't under his conscious control, just keeps doing these tics all the time. So if it turned out that the person had some they were serving some unconscious purpose, and there's some explanation of the behavior that showed it had some purpose, and it would count as action, that it would be purposeful behavior, So it would be action, even though the person wasn't aware of why they were doing the thing. Like, they know, just the body just seems to be having all this funny reaction, but it could turn out that the purpose there is doing you was right. And as a matter of interest, Mises knew Freud. They were not that close, but they did know each other. So what we have, the basic point, remember, action is purposeful behavior. Now, sometimes it's hard to tell whether something qualifies as action. For example, suppose I went for a walk. That would clearly be an action. I want to get some exercise, so I go out and take a walk. So that, no problem, I'm taking a walk in action. But what about the individual steps? Are they separate actions too? Well, mostly when we're walking, we're not paying attention to what we're doing. We're not consciously saying, okay, put this foot forward, put that foot forward. No, we're just walking. So does this count as purposeful behavior? Hard to tell. I won't resist the temptation at this point to give you one of my characteristically bad jokes. There was a man who went to a barber for a haircut. He was wearing headphones. So when he got on the chair, the barber asked him to take the headphones off. He said, no, he didn't want to do that. So then the barber had a difficult job. He had to cut around the headphones. Earphones. So after a while, the man dozed off, and the barber thought, oh, well, I'll just take the earphones off and finish the haircut. By the time he wakes up, he won't notice I took them off. So he did that, and a few seconds after he did that, the man had a heart attack and collapsed. So this barber was quite distraught, and they had to call an ambulance and have the man taken away. And after the man was taken away, he saw that the earphones were still there, and he was wondering what was so important that the man had to have the earphones on while he was having the haircut. So he put the earphones on, turned them on, and he was hearing, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. If you could, this person, breathing was an action. You have to purposeful behavior, you have to be under conscious control. So, as I say though, when you put this joke aside, the reason I mentioned this is to show there are borderline cases where it's hard to tell whether something qualifies as purposeful behavior. Now we'll see how Mises answered this particular question. Do the particular steps of walking count as an action? How I think of it, he would answer that question, but he doesn't. Well, that's a good example. But he makes a very important philosophical point about these borderline cases. And the important point is that the fact that we have borderline cases does not, repeat, not show or imply that the concept is unclear. For example, we know the difference between bald and not bald. A bald person, one, doesn't have any hair, and a not bald person does have hair. So you can see, say, I'm quite bald, I don't have very much hair, but there are borderline cases. There are some people have some hair, but not that much. And we don't seem to have an exact criterion for when someone's bald. We don't say, well, you're bald if you have 25 hairs on your head or fewer. You're not bald if you have 26 hairs. So we don't know the exact criterion for when someone's bald. I didn't say there is no exact criterion, because you'd be surprised if there's one influential philosophical view that in these borderline cases, there is, in fact, an exact criteria, just don't know what it is. But a lot of people say, not only don't we know what the exact criteria is, but there is none. Regardless of that, the point is, the fact that we have borderline cases doesn't show the distinction, conceptual distinction, falls and not falls, is unclear, except we don't quite know where to draw the boundary. So the same is true for human action. We can distinguish between purposeful behavior, behavior that isn't purposeful, even if there are borderline cases where it's hard to tell whether the behavior fits in purposeful or not purposeful. There's a very important essay Mises wrote of profit and loss. And he uses this point, I think it's a very important philosophical point, that he makes this point again, is that the existence of borderline cases doesn't show that a conceptual distinction is unclear. So he uses this point to criticize the British logician L.S. Debye, Lizzie Susan Debye. She was one of the few women academics in the philosophy of the 1930s. And he thought very highly of her generally as a logician, but he criticized her for talking about excess profit. So he said, well, excess profit is different, say, from the example I gave before, bald and not bald. We're talking about baldness. Baldness, we do have a clear concept. Bald versus someone who doesn't have any hair. And even though there's borderline cases, we still have a clear concept of baldness. We said, excess profit isn't just we can't draw the exact boundary. We don't have the concept of excess profit. We could have cases where people make a lot of profit. But we don't have a concept of excess profit. So we don't have a clear concept. So using this in this essay and to make this very important distinction between cases where the borderline cases and other cases where there's no clear concept at all. So again, human action probably do have a clear concept. Human action is purposeful behavior, even though they're borderline cases. So what would Mises say about the example I gave of walking in a cave? Or remember the example, I say I'm going for a walk, that counts as acting purposeful behavior. I wanted to go for a walk, so I'm going for a walk. But what about the particular steps I'm not thinking that I take this step? I'm not like that man, Joe. I'm not that left foot, right foot. I'm just walking without really thinking about it. So, Mises, I think, would count the particular steps of action so long as it could be under the conscious control. It doesn't actually have to be under your control, conscious control, as long as it could be. So I could, if I wanted it, be monsters, killing things. This guy could consciously decide to make one step and another step, but so since that's true, what the individual steps would be indices of action, even though I'm not consciously thinking about it, but I could if so mind. Now, so now we understand the preliminary way why what action is action is purposeful behavior. Now, question, a natural question to come up is why do we act? Why do we engage in purposeful behavior? And Nietzsche said, well, we act because we're dissatisfied with our present situation. We want to change it. I say, I wasn't satisfied with the situation where I'm not lecturing on economics, I'm not lecturing on action, I'm not going to do this. So I act, I give a lecture because I prefer the situation where I'm lecturing to the present situation where I'm not lecturing. I don't want to just be quiet. I want to give my lecture, so I'm acting because I'm not satisfied with where I am. Now, supposing I was completely satisfied, everything was all right, there could be no need to ask why change things if everything's all right. And here again, I'll give in to the temptation to tell one of my bad jokes. This family had a baby boy who was too quiet and intelligent, but he never spoke. He got to be 5 years old and never said a word. And family was very worried about him. But then one morning at breakfast, he said, the eggs are too salty. So, mother said, you can talk. Why didn't you say anything until now? And he said, well, up till now, everything was all right. So this, I told this bad joke not just because I like unusual jokes, but I think it illustrates the point that when you're acting, you're dissatisfied with preferences and you're acting to improve things. Yes, and there's a slight complication which beginning to get into, supposing everything is all right now, but it won't be unless we act. We still have reason to act. So it isn't strictly true, although it almost always is, that we're dissatisfied with our present situation. It could be we're dissatisfied with the present situation in our life, but we're dissatisfied with what will happen if we don't. That's the problem. You don't really have to worry about that. But if you think we're at because we're dissatisfied, then it covers about 99.9% of all the actions we've done to act. We want to change the way things are. What it would be if we don't act, we want to act with putting now. Okay, so we're aiming, we're not satisfied with how things are now, and that has to be satisfied. So we want to change things. So we need to what are we aiming at? Well, of course, we have particular goals in mind and actions. I want to give a lecture, so that's my aim, to give a lecture. That's why I'm doing it. You can have particular goals. Whatever the goal we have, we're aiming at happiness. Now this sounds like we have to be extremely careful here, because it's not like a very controversial claim. We had a case, say, where imagine a woman sees her little boy run out into the street, so she just runs out into the street and she throws herself into front of moving car so little boy won't be killed. So it sounds peculiar to say, well, she's aiming at happiness. But in the way we need to use the term, we could say this because happiness has to be understood in a purely formal way. It's just a placeholder for whatever we're aiming at when we act. So all action means that happiness isn't a controversial claim. It's just another way of saying action is aiming at a particular end or goal. I mean, we're going to call that and your goal happiness. So, just the way he has this using that word, it isn't, again, tend to make say anything controversial. So, on the way he needed to use the term happiness, self-sacrifice, committing suicide, aesthetic practice, they would count as aiming at happiness. Again, these are not making controversial claims. If you think it is controversial, then you're using the term happiness in different way. And we relate to you to the Epicurean tradition philosophy, Epicurus is the Greek philosophy of 241 to 270 BC. He taught that we aim in a state of perfect mental peace, which he called ataraxia. That this is never reached. So you can see the relation of this to what we think that we think we're always acting to the rules of the satisfaction. So what we're aiming for is the state where our dissatisfaction ceases to be. Yep. Now, when you say human being acts, sounds like a pretty obvious statement. Isn't it obvious? We all engage in purposeful behavior. And that's one way that she say, isn't that all things you say look good as well? If you challenge that, you're engaging in purposeful behavior yourself responding to if you're acting. Well, I think it's right that it would be very improbable to deny altogether there's such a purpose for the behavior. But there are schools of psychology who say purposeful behavior isn't all that important if you're trying to understand human behavior. Purpose isn't that big deal. One position goes against the importance of action is behavior. This was the move in psychology. There are still some behaviors that is not talking. So what behaviors say is what it again is not a stupid position of the first look. Might say after the behavior is deny that say, people were doing all sorts of actions, speaking and moving around, doing all sorts of things, you can consider just obviously wrong to say people don't act to this. Or the behaviors would say is sure, people act in the sense of doing things, but if you're trying to explain what you're doing, the purpose, the conscious purpose, isn't really important. Sometimes it is, it's not interesting. That big deal. I'll tell you one other joke here. You probably heard this one. About two behaviors meet each other on the street. recent ones have been Elihu Feinhaus. I once told that joke in 1969, the free of Hayek and Flask. I can say I made Hayek laugh. He was a teacher. I took his course in philosophy, social science at UCLA. Hard to believe that this was a long ago that it was. Now, there's another hypothesis to do. The human being that makes us say human being. Engaging purpose of behavior besides behavior. Behavior is the view that conscious purpose, the purpose for behavior isn't really that important like being behavior. Now there's another group. Again, this type of pathological school was more prominent when these describing groups. They were called instinct psychology. Immediately mentioned William Dewey. Influential psychologist of the Harvard. So, instinct psychology suggests, that we don't act under unconscious control, we just have instinct that moves it just like, say, animals act on instinct. Say, if you have a frog and you're sitting there and see the fly going by, won't think it's all there's a good tasty meal and you go get it just when the fly goes by, the frog's tongue will go out instinctively get the fly. He said, it's not doing that consciously. So, what the intuition psychology says is that human beings are like that, not like that. They don't have some conscious control, they just have some instinct. Certain examples to show what they have in mind would be this. Suppose you're standing in line, say there's a lecture that you want to go to, say Tom Woods is speaking in your town, you want to stand in line here to speak, and somebody just pushes ahead of you, just pushes you out of line, and you respond with angry words. going to need to jump into an extreme position to an extreme left. In the Korean inside, how is it your anger follows just from instinct? You don't say to yourself, well, this person's been rude to me, pushed ahead of me, so I'm going to respond by saying something. You just do something, just the words come out. But we need to respond to this. We didn't accept this. We should be able to see how we respond from what I said so far. What I'm saying is, we might have the tendencies to respond in certain ways. Say, someone comes up to you and spits in your face, you're just going to get angry at you. Respond something automatic. But you could control it if you wanted. You could decide to suppress your anger. So as long as you could control your instinct, still come back. Remember, I gave this example to talk about my case where are the individual steps you take in the wrong action, given you normally don't decide consciously on you take one step and you take another step, you just start walking. You could, if you wanted to exercise constant control, step. So here in this case, you could, if you wanted to bring your anger under control, maybe you would, in certain cases, holding it's extremely important that you not offend this person who pushed ahead of you in line. Maybe much bigger than you are if you get into a fight with him and squash. So you can just decide, well, I'm not going to react. It counts as action if you do react annually without thinking about it because you could have brought it up to the control even if you didn't. Now, raises some other problems with this instinct psychology. He quotes the German philosopher Friedrich Feuerbach as saying that every instinct is an instinct to happen. So what does Feuerbach mean by that? Well, he says, if you say you have the instinct to react angrily to certain kinds of insults,